It's wild to think about, you know. Not that long ago, like before 1984, New York state law had this thing called the marital rape exemption.
Yeah.
Basically, it meant a husband could, well, rape his wife.
And it wouldn't be considered a crime.
Yeah, exactly. Crazy,
Yep,
right?
it is. To think that kind of thinking, those beliefs about marriage and women's place in it lasted for so long. It
Right.
makes you think, you know, how can the law be so behind the times, so out of touch with basic rights and how we understand things now?
Totally. That's why we're diving deep into this case today. People v. Liberta. It's not just some random criminal case, it's huge.
It shook things up for sure.
Big time. It's a landmark case, a battle fought on the grounds of equal protection. It finally chipped away at those outdated ideas about marriage and gender that were baked right into the legal
It
system.
was a turning point.
It really was. Think of this deep dive as like your crash course on Liberta.
The cheat sheet.
Exactly. We're going through the facts, the logic the court used, and what it means for us today, you know, especially for law students like you trying to make sense of it all.
It's a foundational case for sure.
Okay, so big picture, Liberta makes us question like the very basis of our legal traditions.
It does. It makes you wonder what other ideas we just accept as normal.
Right, ideas that maybe if we look closer aren't fair at all.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's break down Liberta. First, the story. It starts with Mario and Denise Liberta, married in 78.
And they had a son.
Yep, their family grew quickly, but things went south fast.
Abuse, huh?
Yeah. By April of 1980, Denise got a temporary protective order from family court.
Serious stuff.
Definitely. It meant Mario had to move out, couldn't contact Denise, except for supervised visits with their son once a week.
Wow.
Not a suggestion, this was a court order.
Recognizing the danger she was in.
Exactly. The state already knew Denise needed protection from Mario.
So this wasn't just some marital spat.
Nope, not at all.
But then in March 81, things got really bad. Mario tricked Denise into coming to his motel room, told her a friend would be there, but the
Uh-oh.
friend left. And Mario, well, he raped and sodomized Denise.
Horrible.
It gets worse. Their 2.5-year-old son was there, watching the whole thing.
Oh, God, that's just awful. Imagine the trauma for both of them.
It's unimaginable. The fact that their child was there witnessing this
It
violence.
just underscores how wrong it all was.
Exactly. Legal technicalities aside, this was a deeply damaging event. So Denise reports the crime, right? Grave woman. But Mario's defense, he hides behind this outdated marital exemption law.
The one we talked about earlier.
Yep. He basically argued, I'm her husband. I can't rape her.
It's mind-boggling that such an argument could even be made.
Right. Like, how can a system meant to protect people, to uphold justice, have a loophole like that?
It forces us to think about the power dynamics in marriage, you know, throughout history, how women were treated, how little control they had over their own bodies.
Yeah, that's the historical context we can't ignore. So the case goes to court. And unbelievably, the trial court dismisses the indictment against Mario.
Seriously.
Yeah, because of that marital exemption. Like a court saying, well, you were married, so it's okay.
I believe.
It really is. But luckily, that wasn't the end. The appellate division steps in, reverses the decision, and the charges are reinstated. Mario goes to trial, is found guilty.
As he should be.
Absolutely. But then he appeals, of course. The appellate division upholds the guilty verdict, and finally, the case goes to the highest court in New York, the Court of Appeals.
So this is where things get interesting, right?
Big time. This is where People v. Liberta becomes the landmark case we're talking about. The Court of Appeals had to answer two crucial questions.
The big ones.
Yeah. One, did that marital exemption in the rape and sodomy laws violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment?
The 14th Amendment. Big deal.
Huge. Basically, it guarantees everyone equal protection under the law. And the second question, did the fact that the rape law was gender specific, like implying only men could be rapists?
Which is ridiculous,
Right.
obviously.
Totally outdated. So did that also violate the Equal Protection Clause?
Two fundamental questions about fairness and equality in the law.
Exactly. And what did the Court of Appeals say? A resounding yes to both. The marital exemption, gone. Gender-specific language in the rape statute, out of
A
here.
victory for common sense.
For justice, for equality. It's a long overdue dismantling of these messed up legal principles. And for law students, what's interesting is how the court got there. They basically took apart all those justifications people use to defend these bad laws. Like with the marital exemption, there was this idea of implied consent.
Implied consent.
Yeah, like by getting married, a woman automatically consents to anything her husband does sexually.
As if marriage is some kind of contract for unlimited sexual access.
Right. The court threw that idea out the window. They said marriage is a partnership, not ownership.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A marriage license isn't a free pass to assault your partner.
Exactly. And the court also shut down those arguments about marital privacy and reconciliation.
As if allowing rape would somehow help with those things.
It's absurd, right? The court basically said, look, condoning violence in a marriage does the opposite of protect privacy and encourage reconciliation. It just doesn't make sense.
And the court's language is so powerful.
It is.
They said, and I quote, a married woman has the same right to control her own body as an unmarried woman.
So simple, yet so powerful.
Right.
It's about basic equality and bodily autonomy, no matter what, married or not.
And the court said, straight up, there's no good reason to treat rape differently if it happens within a marriage.
None. The harm is the same. The violation is the same. Okay, so that's the marital exemption. Now, the gender-specific law. Here, the court said, rape is violence, plain and simple.
It's about power and control.
Right. And it has nothing to do with the perpetrator's gender. This old law was saying only men could be rapists, which is, well, obviously wrong.
A complete misunderstanding of the issue.
Totally. The court recognized that anyone can be a victim and anyone can be the perpetrator.
Right. Limiting it to just men denied justice to male victims and let women off the hook.
Exactly. It just didn't make sense, legally or morally. So let's get into the legal nitty-gritty. To make their decision, the court used different levels of what's called scrutiny.
Ah, legal jargon.
I know, but it's important. For the marital exemption, they used rational basis review, basically the lowest level of scrutiny for a law. It just means the law has to have some rational connection to a legitimate government interest.
It's a pretty low bar.
It is. But even then, the marital exemption failed. The state couldn't come up with any valid reason to let someone violate another person just because they're married.
Oh.
You know? Marital harmony and privacy, those arguments went out the window as soon as the exemption was used to excuse the violence in the first place.
It's a contradiction.
Total contradiction. But for the gender-specific law, the court used a higher level of scrutiny, intermediate scrutiny. It means the law has to be more closely related to an important government objective.
A tougher test.
Yep. And surprise, surprise, the gender-specific law failed this one too.
Because of course it did.
The state couldn't show how limiting the definition of rapist to just men served any important goal, you know? A gender-neutral law does a way better job of actually preventing and punishing sexual assault, no matter who the victim or perpetrator is.
Makes sense.
Right. Okay, last point about Liberta. The court didn't throw out the entire rape and sodomy laws.
They didn't.
Nope. They were smart about it. They just removed the unconstitutional parts, the marital and gender exemptions.
So they fixed the law without having to rewrite the whole thing.
Exactly. They broadened the protection of the law to everyone, regardless of marital status or gender, while keeping the main idea of those laws intact, you know, criminalizing the violence itself.
Strategic and effective.
Okay, so what happened after Liberta? What was the impact? Well, in New York, it got rid of that marital rape exemption for good. Seriously. But Liberta did more than that. It had ripple effects across the country.
Setting a precedent.
Exactly. Other states saw what New York did and started rethinking their own laws on marital rape.
It helped fuel a nationwide push to recognize that violence in a marriage is still a crime.
A huge shift in thinking. Liberta also changed how we view privacy in marriage. Before, there was this idea that marriage was this, like, super private sphere and the law shouldn't interfere.
Even if there was abuse happening.
Yeah, which is dangerous. Liberta helped shift the focus to individual rights, to bodily autonomy, even within a marriage.
You have the right to say no, regardless of your relationship status.
Exactly. And listen to this. The court actually said marital rape is frequently more traumatic than other rape.
Because of the betrayal involved?
Yeah, it's not just physical violence. It's a violation of trust, of intimacy, of safety. The impact can be devastating. But to really get Liberta, we need to understand its roots. This marital exemption wasn't some random thing. It came from Old English common law, where women were basically seen as their husband's property.
Yikes.
Right. No legal standing of their own, especially in marriage. And that messed up perspective snuck around for centuries.
Crazy to think about.
It is. Think about this. Before Liberta, over 40 states in the U.S. still had some kind of marital rape exemption.
There were 40.
Yeah. Now, all 50 states say marital rape is a crime. Of course, there are still challenges.
Loopholes, difficulties in prosecuting these cases.
Yeah, the fight isn't over. But Liberta shows us that courts have a responsibility to update laws that are outdated, you know?
to reflect how society changes, how our understanding of rights and justice evolves.
Exactly. Laws should protect everyone, not just some people. And Liberta is a perfect example of that.
It's about using the law to fight inequality, to challenge the system.
And for you law students listening, think about how Liberta used the Equal Protection Clause to do just that. It's a reminder to be critical, to question things, even if they seem settled, you know?
Because tradition doesn't always equal justice.
Exactly. So, to wrap up, People v. Liberta had a huge impact. It changed how we think about marital rape, how it's prosecuted, and it strengthened the idea that everyone deserves equal protection under the law.
No exceptions.
No exceptions. And it leaves us with some things to think about. Like, Liberta challenged these old distinctions based on relationships and gender. What other areas of law still have those kinds of outdated ideas?
Where could we apply the same kind of reasoning?
Right. And even though marital rape is legally recognized now, what more needs to be done? How do we prevent it, support survivors, and make sure these cases are prosecuted fairly?
Important questions.
Really important. Because achieving true justice requires constant vigilance and a willingness to challenge the status quo, and that's what Liberta is all about.
It's a reminder that we always have work to do.
Yeah, the fight for equality never really ends.